You know, they say that beauty is in the eye of the beholder, as though beauty, be it beauty in the arts or those the beauty we perceive with the eyes or the ears, is somehow entirely subjective. And if that were true, how would the pursuit of beauty and the call, the vocation to both produce it and enjoy it, how would that serve the neighbor if everything were entirely subjective? We're going to be talking about called to love beauty as continuing part of our series on lay vocation here for this half hour of Issues Etc. Welcome back for the second hour. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Uwe Simonetto joins us along with Pastor Henry Gehrke. We're going to be talking about music in both the secular and the sacred realm. And then coming up in about a half hour, Terry Mattingly will join us from Scripps Howard News Service. We're going to be talking about the top 10 religion stories of 2005. He says it's hard to tell nowadays as a reporter what's a religion story and what isn't, since a lot of the biggest stories of 2005 have already a religious element in them. So we'll talk about the list, and then I want to hear from you as well during open lines, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I'll walk through the list and ask you what you think is the top story, if something was left off the list. So get ready to join us there in about 40 minutes on Issues Etc. Dr. Uwe Simonetto is a regular guest. He's been with us week after week here as we talk about lay vocation on Issues Etc. He's an international journalist and director of the New Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation. Uwe, welcome back.
Great to be back.
And Pastor Henry Gehrke is a regular guest on the program as well. He's director of the Concordia Seminary Chorus and a resource for us here on Issues Etc. for much of the music that we both study and hear. Henry, welcome back.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
What do both of you think of this notion, and it's very popular now in the arts and in the realm of beauty, that beauty is entirely subjective. It's just in the eye of the beholder. Therefore, one man's art is another man's profanity and vice versa, things like that. Very popular ideas, especially in the realm of the arts here in the West. Uwe, starting with you.
Well, it's a popular idea not just in the realm of the arts, it's in the realm of religion and everything else. I think it's false. Yes, you know, the German composer Karlheinz Stockhausen, whose music is not my favorite, called the images of 9/11 the greatest work of art he'd ever seen. Okay? And if you will, yes, there is such a thing as evil beauty. It is true. Or evil aesthetics. But of course it has a different effect. Now, if you say beauty is in the eyes of the beholder, let me take an example from my family. My mother was an oratorio singer and trained me to appreciate the music of Johann Sebastian Bach. I was born in Leipzig and virtually in the shadow of the Thomaskirche, where Bach worked in the 18th century. My father was of a lighter mind. He preferred the waltzes of Johann Strauss and didn't have much time for Bach, but he loved Johann Strauss and taught me to appreciate Johann Strauss, especially when donning tails and dancing to him. Both are wonderful forms of music, entirely different, but they're great forms of music. And I would not sit in judgment, certainly not in a secular realm, say, well, you know, you're an idiot because you're just like Strauss, or you are too snobby because you prefer Bach, or for that matter, why can't we appreciate both? There are certain elements in what one calls music today, that are missing in what one calls music today, which I think are essential. One is melody and the other one is harmony. You have rap, screaming people normally screaming their anger into a mic, rhythmically. Rhythm there is, but there is no harmony and there's no melody. Thus, that kind of music is deviating not just from the music that we knew, as Europeans, such as Bach or Beethoven or Johann Strauss, but deviating even more so from what I think is the greatest American music, which is jazz, which of course also has harmony and melody and rhythm and everything else.
Henry, the notion that beauty is in the eye of the beholder, especially when it comes to music, but also more broadly with the arts, really has currency in the church nowadays and has kind of said, look, it's all a matter of preference. In church music, there's not such a thing. How could there be such a thing, people ask, as good church music or poor church music? What's your response?
Some of it, I think, is a result that maybe there isn't a whole lot of training, a lot of skill or talent behind those opinions. And because of that, you know, people end up going for the lowest common denominator, or else just set up some kind of a standard that they feel they can achieve in their own eye, rather than looking at what is available at large.
It's precisely the point he is making, Henry, here, and that is, they may not have been educated, but you know, if you are not being educated to appreciate beauty, whether it's Bach or Strauss is irrelevant in this context, you have not been civilized by your parents. So therefore, parents who do not deliberately train their children to appreciate art, not just music, painting, and mm-hmm. other stuff, are negligent in their duty to what is, I think, a command of God, and that is to civilize and indeed bring order bring order into creation.
Henry?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is just a mere enjoyment of singing, of music. We have fewer homes today that have pianos in them, that have singing that's gathered around the piano as a family or anything like that. Schools oftentimes are the first places where music and the fine arts are cut out of budgets when things get tight. And so therefore we rely more and more on the Sony Walkman and on the speakers rather than live performers. And that one of the great joys I had when I was teaching, that at least once a year I would always try to get string players in or other instruments in to have them accompany the children's choir. And invariably, the children, the first time they heard these instruments, their eyes would just get huge, just because they had never heard that stuff live like that.
Since we're talking about this in the context of lay vocation, Uwe, the very definition that you've laid down many times in our conversations here about what the purpose of vocation is, that is serving the neighbor in love. It is the Christian living in faith before God and serving the neighbor in love. How does music in the secular realm serve the neighbor? Some might argue it's a luxury. It is merely an amusement.
I defer to Thomas Aquinas, who called beauty, and that applies, of course, to music in particular, the splendor of order. The splendor of order. And if you, and music orders the mind. I mean, it serves, look, if I am distressed, or if I am hard at work, or if I'm exhausted, the one thing that calms me, gives me pleasure, orders my mind, is listening to music. Now imagine depriving young people from this beauty. And you know, as Henry indicated, that people have children have an innate sense of beauty. They understand, my God, here we hear a violin, we hear a piano for the first time, or a clarinet. What is this wondrous thing? I had a cleaning woman when I lived in Washington, and her kid, who had not been brought up to music, always stood by my computer, because while I was writing, I was playing on my computer a Bach cantata or My favorite actually is the musical offering, for example, or the Art of the Fugue by Johann Sebastian Bach. And this kid who'd never heard this stuff before would not budge. And his mother then came to me and said, you know, you've totally changed this child because his eyes brighten up. He doesn't want to eat hamburgers anymore. He wants to stand there and listen to this music. And I think that's the cruelest thing. And there's also a social aspect here. Of course, music will continue. If you go to Germany, for example, organists, there are masses of kids going to musical schools and to conservatories to study the organ and study other instruments. But once again, we are creating. Thank God we can do this, but we're creating an elite here. What about the others? What about those who do not have this privilege, not because society forbids them to have this privilege, but because their parents cannot be bothered to impart on their children the love of art? You are creating an artificial society, a multi-level society, and at the bottom rung you have those who can't appreciate art.
We're talking about lay vocation in our ongoing conversation with Dr. Uwe Simonetto, today also joined by Pastor Henry Gehrke of the Concordia Seminary Chorus, talking about Called to Love Beauty today on the program. Let's go to the phones, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and talk with Joe, who's been patiently waiting on his car phone. Joe, welcome.
Hi, Todd. I've read that there are studies that show that there are objective standards of physical beauty that revolve around things like symmetry of the face and that kind of thing. Are there formalized studies showing the same about music and that type of thing, showing objective standards of what would be considered artistic or beautiful?
It's a very good question, Joe. Thank you very much. I know that the music and math are closely related to one another. There's a mathematical quality to music that's undeniable. Does that mean that any studies, Henry, perhaps you would know, can give an objective criteria for beauty, for something that's aesthetically pleasing when it comes to music?
There have been some, I know, that have attempted to do that, and I'm not sure. I'm having a difficult time recalling what those might be, those studies might be. I do know that there are some organizations like those involving music teachers who have issued lists of, like, folk songs that children should know, and therefore they're trying to get them into the school curriculum.
A canon of music that's
right.
Kind of essential?
Right, and that's for America. That happened over in Hungary with Zoltán Kodály,
yeah.
And his whole approach to music education. And that has even come over here to the United States. So there are some of those elements around.
There's also a very interesting fact here, Todd and Joe. You have Western-style music coming out of Europe primarily and then out of the United States. Take the music of Bach, which is immensely appreciated in Japan at the moment. And in fact, this is where some of the best Bach musicians, interpreters come from. It is very close. It has the same harmony and the same melody as the music produced by the Maori down in New Zealand. Same standards. And then there's another thing. Of course, we in the West might find Japanese or Chinese music exotic and alien, but definitely attractive. I mean, I wouldn't get as excited over Ting 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 as I would over a Bach cantata, but I've lived in the Far East for 5 years, and I thoroughly enjoyed that music, even though it was alien to me, because there is definitely something there that has been created for my benefit, if you will.
That would argue against kind of the multicultural argument that is put together so often on a number of fronts, but especially on music, that somehow music, being the product entirely of culture, is going to be particular to that culture, and that something like Bach could not be appreciated by someone who doesn't have all the baggage that goes with Bach.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the goofiest argument in the world because, as I said, go to Japan and try and get a ticket for the Christmas Oratorio or for the St. Matthew Passion in Tokyo, and you find yourself short something like $600 or something like that. It's quite amazing what it costs to have a good interpretation. Some of the best interpreters of Bach's music are Japanese, and some of the greatest researchers of Bach's music come from Japan. And, you know, they were brought up by two different standards. Now, we also know that probably the influence of Gregorian chant, which came into Japan back in the late 16th, early 17th century, may have filtered down into the Japanese sense of harmony and melody, so that when Bach came around in Japan, not until the later 19th century, and of course, especially now, which is, I mean, it's a boom, literally a Bach boom going on, that they had a sense of beauty, of Western beauty, much more so than we have a sense of, for example, Japanese beauty in music, although we do appreciate it.
I asked this question of Uwe before, and Henry, the same question to you. As a Christian vocation, both the love of beauty, but also the production of beauty in music. How does it, in particular in the church, serve the neighbor?
In the church, speaking as a church musician, the music is there for a proclamation of the gospel, but it also gives the opportunity or provides the opportunity for Christians to gather as a body, as a corporate body, to sing the praises of Him who died for us. And by doing so, that is, literally there is strength in numbers at that point, because it strengthens the person who is singing, lets that person know that he or she is not by themselves, but rather are part of the body of Christ, and that their voice is joined not only with those here on earth, but also those in heaven, and those who have gone before us, and those who will come after us.
It occurred to me while Henry was speaking there about not only the kind of real-time benefit of the arts and of music in the church, but also of the historical benefit. We've talked about this many times, Henry, mm-hmm. that hymn writers become preachers to countless generations when their hymns survive, and that even those who compose music to carry the word of God along, music, Bach is a good example, has the ability to preserve the church's message, even, say, in the case of Germany, where many of the churches have forgotten what the church ought to be preaching. You can see one of Bach's gospel passions, and there's the gospel untampered with.
Well, there's the gospel untampered with. I mean, first of all, don't forget the psalmist. I mean, even the heathen quote the psalmist. I mean, this is the most amazing thing. But interestingly enough, there is now a noticeable return to the church, even in Eastern Germany, and the churches that are the fullest, more than ever before, are the churches that perform Bach's music. My nephew, who is and godson, who is a vicar in Leipzig, told me that even though the Thomas Church, Leipzig's Bach's church, had always been well attended, it was so full as never before, probably as full as ever in recorded history. In a city that is 95% de-Christianized. So people are pouring in, and of course they listen to it, they stand there, they have to say the Lord's Prayer, they have to read it, then they stand there and they follow the texts, and if only one out of those thousands of people comes to Christ as a result of this, this is already a major accomplishment. But it's probably much, much more than we think.
Luther, there are some very famous quotes from Luther on music. He, at times, almost sounds as though he's assigning a mystical quality to music, but even more so, not just music, but music used in the service of God's word. He had a deep appreciation for these things, and we read it and it sounds like just someone who, you know, kind of a medieval man who liked the pleasant sounds that music could provide. What was Luther's insight about music, Henry? And then you, Uwe.
First of all, for Luther, music was a gift from God. It comes with no strings attached. It's a gift. In the past, music has always been seen as a teacher, as a influencer of morals. There always seemed to be some kind of agenda attached to it. Luther puts it as a gift from God for the enjoyment of his people and for the proclamation of the gospel. And ties that in very well. He keeps talking about in the Christmas hymn that we just have come across, From Heaven Above to Earth I Come. He says, of which I now will say and sing. He tells the whole Christmas story by doing the singing. And that keeps becoming a very strong part of Luther's proclamation of the gospel.
Before we close our time, we're going to actually play a piece here at the end. We're going to play a piece from Johann Strauss Jr. as we close, so our time is short. Henry, you have an epiphany celebration this Sunday afternoon. Very briefly tell
us
about that.
At 3 o'clock, it's with the seminary choirs. It's our gift to the St. Louis community. We also have at least two other compositions that have been commissioned just for the seminary chorus that will be premiered at this celebration.
And that's, again, when the times and the places?
3 o'clock at the Chapel of on Concordia Seminary's campus.
Pastor Henry Gehrke is director of the Concordia Seminary Chorus. Henry, thank you for being our guest.
Thank you.
And Dr. Uwe Simonetto is a regular guest and international journalist and director of the new Concordia Seminary Institute on lay vocation. Uwe, thank you for being our guest.
Thank you.
By the way, you can read an article by Uwe Simonetto titled Called to Love Beauty on the web. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click links, and you'll find a direct link to Uwe Simonetto and the Concordia Seminary Institute on lay vocation, issuesetc.org. Now, when we come back from this break, we're going to be talking with Terry Mattingly, going through some of the top 10 religion stories according to 2005, and then hearing from you during some open lines, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. St. Paul says, finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc. Larry Rast, Arthur Just, Carl Fikencher, Kurt Marquardt, Peter Scare, Cameron McKenzie.
You probably recognize these names as regular guests on Issues, Etc. But what else do they have in common? Well, they're all members of the Christ-centered, cross-focused faculty of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Dean Wenthy, Walter A. Meyer II, David Scare, Dan Gard, Charles Geeshan, Bill Weinrich.
Have you ever considered the pastoral ministry? Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. For more information, go to our website, issuesetc.org, or call them 1-800-481-2155. Preparing Christ-centered, cross-focused pastors for the 21st century. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
John Pless, Hal Senkbeil, Richard Muller, Roland Ziegler.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Kim Troby, sitting in for Bob Dittmer. With another confirmation hearing set to begin for a Supreme Court nominee, the Family Research Council will return to a tried and true method of getting the church involved in the fight. Justice Sunday 3 will be this Sunday from a Philadelphia church, one day before Judge Samuel Alito's confirmation hearings begin. Josh Montes has more.
61 million households tuned in for Justice Sunday 1, 79 million for Justice Sunday 2. Now, Justice Sunday 3 is being planned from Philadelphia's Greater Exodus Baptist Church. Wendy Christian with FRC says churches across the nation can participate.
We provide opportunity for churches all across America to tune in to the simulcast so that they can be aware of how important some of the judicial decisions that are made, the confirmation process for judicial nominees, and how important it is that we be involved in the entire process.
Along with a message from FRC's Tony Perkins, Dr. James Dobson of Focus on the Family will give the keynote address. Bruce Houseconnect with Focus on the Family hopes those messages will be a fresh reminder that the decisions from those who sit on the bench impact our lives every day.
By putting judicial activists on the bench in the past, we have been the victims of decisions proclaiming a right to abortion, same-sex marriage, homosexual sodomy, and the like. With conservatives on the bench, we can leave the lawmaking to the legislatures of the states and to Congress, where the responsibility belongs.
Justice Sunday 3 is titled Proclaim Justice Throughout the Land. For Family News and Focus, I'm Josh Montes.
The live simulcast is being carried on hundreds of Christian radio and TV stations and as a live webcast. Churches can also pick up the direct feed. For more information, contact FRC at justicesunday.com. For Family News in Focus, I'm Kim.
Mornings on AM 850 KFUO offer you a Christian way to start your weekday. Hi, I'm Paul Clayton, inviting you to hear your inspirational Christian favorites, great guests, and the information you need to prepare you for the road ahead. And after the morning show at 9:30, stick around for Focus on the Family on AM 850 KFUO.
Here's what Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Angus Manoj has to say about our Book of the Month for January. Quote, for C.S. Lewis, true education is a way to free our thinking from the spirit of the age and to humble our ego to objective truth, unquote. The book is titled Irrigating Deserts, C.S. Lewis on Education. It's our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January. It's published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Irrigating Deserts.
We're going to be talking about the top religion stories of 2005 coming up here in just a moment with Terry Mattingly. One of the stories that didn't make it in 2005 because it occurred in 2004, but the aftermath, of course, still is going on, are these tsunamis that took place on the rim of the Indian Ocean. Now, that is, in the 24-hour news cycle of today, long forgotten. But the need and the need for Christian care and concern and relief continues just as much as it did before. LCMS World Relief still has its eye and its hands in the relief efforts for tsunami victims, even more than a year later. Think about LCMS World Relief here at the beginning of this year as you're considering where your charitable donations, where your gifts, and where your concern will go. They attach your relief dollars to the preaching of Christ and Him crucified. They are concerned with both body and soul. Their toll-free number, you can donate by this number, 1-888-930-4438, 1-888-930-4438. LCMS World Relief underwrites Issues Etc. You can find them at our website right there on the homepage, issuesetc.org. On our homepage, look for their logo, issuesetc.org. Terry Mattingly is a regular guest. He joins us here in the beginning days of 2006 to look back on 2005 and talk about the Religion News Writers Association's top 10 events of 2005. Terry is a senior fellow for journalism at the Council for Christian Colleges and University. He writes On Religion, a column for the Scripps Howard News Service. and is author of the new book, Pop Goes Religion, Faith in Popular Culture. And when we conclude our short conversation with Terry, I want to hear from you. It'll be open lines. What do you think of the list of top 10 events compiled by the Religion News Writers Association? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Terry, welcome back.
Good to be here.
It's pretty tricky trying to pick out religion events in 2005, since the line between religion news and other news, for lack of a better word, is pretty blurry nowadays, isn't it?
It's really getting amazing. 20-something years ago, late 70s, early 80s, I had a chance to talk to the late religion writer George Cornell, who was one of the real pioneers of the religion beat in America. And Cornell told me that every year you should watch the Associated Press list of the top 10 stories in the world, period. Not religion stories, just stories, the biggest stories of the year. And he said, and he'd never seen a year when at least five didn't have extremely strong faith elements or raise faith questions that you had to deal with, and, you know, within a day or two of them happening. So, I mean, this year, the Religion News Writers Association's list, to me, was a little strange. It's not that I disagreed with it so much. It's that I was troubled by the fact that it's a very conventional list. I mean, you've got, obviously, any year in which a pope dies and another pope is elected, that's going to be, you know, one of the top two or three biggest stories of the year. And then you've got the Terry Schiavo case, and then you have the obvious religious questions and activism that was set into motion by the tsunami, Katrina, the earthquake in Pakistan. We saw all kinds of stories on page one across America about, you know, what role did God play in these disasters, kind of a theodicy, you know, note. We had big Supreme Court cases. We had all kinds of conventional stuff. But I got to the end of the list, and it suddenly hit me that we didn't have a single story in it about the whole conflict in Iraq or Iran or the president of Iran saying that it's time for Israel to go away.
Those are religion stories, aren't they?
Well, that's the question I tried to raise in my column. Is this a situation where the Middle East and the entire war on terror, what some historians call the clash of civilizations, are we at a stage now to where we're almost scared to think about the fact that this story has religious elements? On my blog, getreligion.org, a blog that I and some other journalists put out about religion in the news, I put up something today where the Los Angeles Times had a story that said the U.S. candidate to lead a coalition in Iraq is the secular candidate, and that America is trying to promote a secular government in Iraq. What does the word secular mean in that case? Do we really think we can sell secularism to the Islamic world? Or is the White House confused? Is the newspaper that's covering the White House confused? In other words, at this point, I'm very troubled by this situation where day after day after day we're bombarded with stories linked to the war on terror and the era of terrorism, and we're scared to actually talk about the fact that these stories have religious content.
You know, this is very strange because, I mean, I had not thought of it in these terms, and now I can't help but think about it in these terms. But it seems to me, it probably explains why we've had so much to talk about here in the last year on issues, etc. You know, it's not hard to find a religious angle when much of the news already has it built in there. But one of the things that has been leveled by guests to this program against, the Bush administration in the last year or so, since the war on terror began, is that they seem to kind of consciously being avoid thinking about the religious element when it comes to nation building in Iraq or any of the other efforts here, as though they can ignore Islam as an element in these stories or in their policies.
Yeah, or to think that they could ignore tribalism. And as many people have in the past, get caught in the thicket of trying to separate what is tribalism within the Arab world versus what are the actual beliefs within the Islamic world. And those are not the same things. But I repeated a quote in my column last week that I had used a couple of years earlier. It was not that long after 9/11 that I spoke at a program at the University of Nebraska. And the keynote speaker, obviously above me on the bill, was the church historian, Lutheran historian Martin Marty, probably America's best-known commentator on all things religious. Marty had a haunting quote, and he said, at this point, we're past the point where journalists can afford to be asking, what is religion news? He said that's the question that has dominated a lot of journalistic discourse for 20 years, especially in the era of the religious right, yada, yada. What is religion news? Martin Marty said, now we've got a different question. We are way past that. In the wake of September 11, is there any news today that is not religion news?
Hmm. Well, what about the list then, Terry, other than you mentioned notably the war in Iraq, Iran's posturing, especially vis-a-vis Israel. Other than that big complex of stories there, do you think there's anything missing from the top 10 compiled by Religion News Writers Association?
There was nothing that jumped out at me this year. It's just a perfectly obvious story. I think there's a story that's going to play that we're going to get a lot of, we're going to get our fill of in the coming year. I think this is going to be a wild year between the public and Hollywood, especially as we go into the Oscar races. And I believe that not just because of Brokeback Mountain. I believe that because I think we're going to get an incredibly political year at the Oscar, and I think you're going to see some real sparks fly over that. And that was beginning to warm up at the end of this year, but it's going to boom in the next. Does that make sense?
Yeah. What about this one struck me, although I had to think about it pretty hard before I came up with it. What about the very close association that has developed, at least in the way people think about the president, George W. Bush, and the religious right? Whether he likes it or not, he is pinned with that association of President George W. Bush and American evangelicalism.
Well, I don't think it's going to be that big of a story in the coming year simply because he's not up for re-election, and the congressional Republicans, to some degree, will be running with him or against him, in large part based on whether they think that's important. That showed up in this year's list, primarily linked to the Supreme Court. Now, if you think we got Supreme Court tensions right now, if you get another opening on the Supreme Court within the next 12 months, that is when heck will break loose, because that's the fifth vote. Which right now, the Alito case, is they're fighting over the swing vote to some degree. But if you see another chair go open on the Supreme Court, prepare for, fur to fly.
I noticed I was looking at Christianity Today, who had a similar but somewhat different list of a top 10 religion stories. I think that's how they build it. They had the same angle, or a different angle on the same thing. They talked about how the Democrats, for the first time in a long time as a party, were trying to figure out how to appeal more to religious voters.
Yeah, 2006 could be a really big test year on the faith language of the religious left. And the coalition on the American left right now is not all secular. There are a lot of very secular voices over there, but there are also a lot of very strong, articulate liberal voices who are only now beginning to get their act together. And I think that is going to potentially be one of the big stories of 2006.
Then finally, Terry, is there anything on this list, ranked as it is, and it's just a matter of the voting in the Religion News Writers Association, but is there anything that you would have personally bumped up the list a little farther? That sits low on it.
Well, I don't know. I think both of the Pope ones, to me, that was all one big huge story, especially because Ratzinger was so closely identified with John Paul II. When I think back to this year, I look at that down there, all the way in the position of number 8, the religious right and left, and all the religious questions about the two Supreme Court nominees. I have a lot of trouble putting that all the way down at 8. I think that for a lot of people who care about social issues and political issues in America, the Supreme Court should have been up somewhere around 3 or 4.
Before we let you go, Terry, I understand you mentioned before the Get Religion blog where a number of contributors. Have you added Molly Ziegler as one of your contributors there?
Yes. We now have an extremely strong and vivacious Lutheran presence on the blog.
And she's a very bright journalist to boot and has been a guest on this program as well. I'm glad to see her added there.
We are very, very happy to have her.
TMatt, that's TMatt.net, is the website for Terry Mattingly. He also has a blog, Get Religion. And he writes the On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service. He's author of the new book, Pop Goes Religion, Faith in Popular Culture. And he's a senior fellow for journalism at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. Terry, thanks for your time.
Thank you. You got all that out. That was impressive.
That's what they pay me for. Thanks for being
bye.
Our guest. All right. Oh, by the way, go to Get Religion, that blog. It's really one worth reading. And look for Molly Ziegler's name. She's the newest addition to Terry Mattingly's Association of Contributors there at his blog, Get Religion. For the next 15 minutes, open lines for your questions and your comments. And I want to hear from you on this question. I'm going to read the list, okay, as briefly as I can. And I just want to know, do you think something's missing here? Is there anything missing from this list of top 10 religion news events of 2005? What was your top 10 story? If you had to say, here's the top of all the stories in 2005, what was it? All right. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. You can add one of your own, or you can choose one of these from the list as your top news story in 2005. Our memory should be fresh here. Now, of course, by 68%, the Religion News Writers Association voted the story of the death of Pope John Paul II after a 26-year pontificate to be the top story. There's hardly any arguing with that. Closely associated with that, of course, is the elevation of Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger. That's number two, according to their top 10 story, to be Pope after Pope John Paul II. I was surprised to see their number three. Their number three was the death of Terry Schindler Schiavo. I don't know if I would have put that three. I mean, it's a very important story, but they put it as number three after the two Pope stories. How does this ring to you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Number four, they have as church and faith-based agencies responding to Hurricane Katrina and the tsunamis from 2004 in Southeast Asia, the earthquake in Pakistan, and the question being publicly posed by many religious types, what role did God play in this year of disasters? See, I might have made that one three, because those stories were big, and along with those stories came those questions. What is God doing? We have a conversation coming up sometime soon with Oz Guinness talking about evil in the world of Christians in a world of evil, genocide, and terrorism. And he says there are three big questions that get asked in a time of intense suffering. Why me? Where's God? And how can I stand it? And those were exactly the kind of questions that were being asked in 2005, a year of tsunamis and earthquakes and hurricanes. Number five, here's the fifth on their list of top 10 religion stories from 2005. The ongoing disputes and the split in the global Anglican communion over the issue of homosexuality. I think that sits right about where it belongs. I might have put it up at number four. What about you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Number six, the advocates of intelligent design continue to push for the right to question Darwinism in public schools. That's a story that I predict will rise on the list next year. Next year, it will be farther up than number six on the list. It might be four or five. Number seven, U.S. Supreme Court approves posting of the Ten Commandments outside Texas State Capitol, but disapproves their posting inside the Kentucky courthouses by 5-4 votes. I'd almost forgotten that one. I mean, it was a big vote, but I'd almost forgotten it. Do you think it belongs higher on the list? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And then number eight, Voices on the religious left and right question President Bush's three nominees to the Supreme Court. You remember who they are? It's easy to forget. It's easy to forget that there was Roberts, and then there was Harriet Myers, who was very quickly touted as an evangelical Christian and then deemed less than qualified by the man who nominated her. And then finally, Judge Alito, who's still sitting in the chute, waiting for his hearings. Number nine, the Vatican releases a long-awaited document on gay seminarians. That came late in the year. It's a pretty big story, but I think it deserves a number nine. At least it should be on the list. And then finally, how could it pass if it's in fact true that Billy Graham has held his final evangelistic campaign, that one he held in New York City? It has to be in the top 10 stories if it was in fact his last evangelistic crusade. If it isn't, this one doesn't belong in the number 10 spot. What about you? Your phone calls for the next 10 minutes, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Anything on this list that you think, other than the ones that made number one, deserve to be your number one religion story in 2005? Anything on this list that you would push up to number one? Or is there one missing that the Religion News Writers Association missed? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We're coming to you live this Tuesday. It's January the 3rd, coming up in about 10 minutes. After this bit of open lines, Hour 3 of Issues, Etc., Linda Preuss is going to join us from the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill of Missouri. We're going to be talking about Christians and mental illness. By the way, that's also going to be an hour in which we're happy to take your phone calls, especially those who would wish to call in anonymously to talk with Linda Preuss. Our numbers now and then, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I had the same reaction that Mattingly did when I saw the lists that came out. This isn't the only one, but this is the one that's making the rounds in the news. My reaction was, what can you think of a story, a big story, that wasn't religion-related in 2005? It's been a year of, it's almost uncanny to me how much the religion angle gets played in the so-called secular-biased news media. Let's go to the phones, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Ken is calling from Herman, Missouri. Hi, Ken.
How are you doing?
Very well.
I think that the media missed the number one story. This was the cross-centered, theology-focused ministry of Issues, Etc., and their 10th anniversary celebration. It's unprecedented that such a program would continue for 10 years.
It's a surprise to me, Ken. Thank you very much. Where is that? A 10-year anniversary is a big event. We celebrated that back in October, near the end of the month. How come that's not on the list? Steve calls from his car. Steve, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Well, Happy New Year.
And to you as well.
And pretty soon, if you keep this up, you can also do Greek Orthodox Christmas also.
January 6th.
Yeah, so you can get four in this year.
You know, I hadn't thought about that, but don't tell my kids, because I'm completely spent out.
The other thing, good thing you're not Catholic, otherwise they'd expect something on St. Nicholas Day, too.
Well, you know what I celebrate on January 6th? I mean, of course, nothing wrong with celebrating the birth of Christ that day, but I celebrate my anniversary of my ordination. It was the 6th of January, Epiphany Sunday, 15 years ago this week. Yep.
Very good. Hey, you know what I would throw in? I don't know if I should give a credit. It was Pat Robertson's tirade about Hugo Chavez.
Oh, yeah.
Just because the way I look at it this way is total discreditation to trying to be called a minister and then trying to say we should assassinate a political leader.
You know what I'd do, Steve, and thank you for the call. I think I'd give Pat Robertson just a permanent, as long as he's alive, a permanent slot in the top 10. Because he says enough things in the course of any given calendar year, if you put them together, to earn him a spot. I mean, during previous years, he was talking about praying away hurricanes and praying hurricanes toward things. But he had a pronouncement about Hugo Chavez. Remember, he called for the assassination. And then he said he didn't, and then he said he did. He had a pronouncement about Dover, saying that if they suffer a natural disaster, they deserve it, and they shouldn't pray to God for any help because God's going to turn his back on them because they turned their back on him. What else did he have to say? Oh, I'm sure he said a couple other things. I'd have to look in my files, but he says enough in the course of a calendar year to give him a permanent slot, at least number 8 or 9 every year. Just hold him a place. Fill in the blanks. Just have it permanently printed. Pat Robertson said blank and blank and blank. And there you go. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It certainly makes the news, doesn't it? What's your top religion story for 2005? I got to agree with the Religionist News Writers Association that the death of the Pope cannot be beat. And that his quick replacement by one of the more well-known and influential cardinals in the latter part of the 20th century, and not representing in any way a real shift in theological gears for the Roman Catholic Church, and perhaps representing a move away from Vatican II, those two together have to be at the top of this list. Do you agree or do you disagree? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Coming up in a matter of days, January the 17th through the 21st, on the campus of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, one of our happy underwriters, they're going to be holding their annual symposia. Two events back to back, 17th through the 21st of this month. They're on their campus. The first one, a symposia focusing on justification in the scriptures, the challenges past, present to scriptural teaching on justification. And then the second part of that symposia is on the person and work of the Holy Spirit. This symposia has to simply be attended to be understood. It is a great event, including many pastors and many lay people. And it's an opportunity not only to hear some of the very best minds in theology talking about these highly relevant topics, but also to worship together with the Concordia Theological Seminary community on a regular basis over the course of those days of the symposia. For more information, go to our website, issuesetc.org, or call them toll-free, not toll-free, call them area code 260-452-2247 and ask about the symposia. Real quickly, before we go to our break, Andy from Kirkwood. Andy, welcome.
I was thinking perhaps the growing resistance among congregations of the liberal denominations and the withdrawal of same from their denominations.
Oh, that's a good one. Thank you very much. Now, that was kind of covered in the whole Anglican split between the Anglican Communion and the Episcopal Church USA angle. That was kind of covered in that one, and that one fell on the list right at number 5, right in the very middle there. But thank you very much for the call. We'll continue to take your calls on the other side of this break. A little bit more open lines in the third hour on the top, your top story for 2005, your top religion story. Stay tuned. We'll take your calls right after this.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at kfuo.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.